0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan in for Joe today until 3 o'clock. Now, take a listen to this. There are tears streaming down my face as I write this email, and I am at the end of my tether trying to resolve this recurring problem I have at my home in the west of Galway. Over the past 3 to 4 years, there has been an invasion of millipedes coming into my home, and I'm unable to stop it happening no matter what I do. And believe me, I have tried everything possible. I have PVC windows and doors, but yet they seem to have a way of hiding in the frame despite the windows and doors being locked, and there are no holes that they can come through, and yet there they are inside the house along my floors and my walls. I don't know what I can do at this stage, but I am at the end of the road trying to get there. I am now a prisoner in my own home. As a result, I can't open windows or doors in fear they come in. It's awful and really getting to me. I really need help solving this, please. Lisa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, that's not you, Lisa. That's a listener who is clearly at the end of their tether with millipedes. And you've been there.
I've been there. So I'm also in the west of Ireland, and I can tell her that there is a fairly easy solution to this. It's called diatomaceous earth. And I've texted the details on to you. You can make them available to her. It can be easily bought on Amazon. I would recommend using the human grade of it. It's also got uses in agriculture.
Okay. Lisa, can I stop you a second and just let, because people may not be, you know, familiar with millipedes in particular, or, you know, the idea of an infestation. Mm-hmm. So tell me your own story. First of all, describe a millipede first.
It's kind of shiny, black, segmented. There are about two pairs of feet on each segment. They can be very tiny. They can grow larger.
Do they move quickly?
They can move quickly enough, and they can roll up in a little ball if they're frightened or think they're under attack. So you often see them as sort of little black balls.
When we talk about an infestation then, I mean, are we talking, mm-hmm. you know, 5 or 10 of them? Or are we talking about 20 or 30? What kind of numbers are they moving?
Well, for me now, I have very few because I've been using diatomaceous earth. But they will come at this time of the year because they like being in rotted material. So as leaves rot in damp areas, crawl spaces behind cabinets, around leaky pipes. So when you want to treat for these things, you've got to go where they live or where they're attracted to. So, yeah.
And tell me your own story then. When did you start noticing them coming into the house?
I mean, I think they're just part of life in rural Ireland. It's you're going to see them at certain times of the year, especially when it's damp. Now we've recently had more rain, so yeah, I've had them. But not only that, there are loads of bugs in rural Ireland, in any rural area, and they're attracted to warm spaces, so they're trying to get into your house.
Yeah. I grew up, well out into the country, and I saw a lot of creepies over the years, mm-hmm. but I don't actually have any memory of any large numbers of these millipedes indoors.
Well, they look like very thin little worms. They look like little black worms. And obviously, if they're allowed to continue to live in your house, you'll see them getting bigger.
Mm. But, how long are they? Would they be like an inch, 2 inches?
They can be an inch, 2 inches. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I think it's the fact of all those little feet that kind of gives me... a little bit of the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, but definitely diatomaceous earth works for all critters. I don't care if they're flying things or whatever. If you get flies on your windowsills, you know, you can sprinkle it into that area. Door jams, back of cabinets, under kitchen cabinets, behind sofas, against the wall. Under your bed, you can use it everywhere.
And it's silica, is it? It's a silica dust.
It's a silica, and I would just say that you don't want to put it where babies are going to crawl. And when you're spreading it, put a mask on. You don't want to breathe the silica. But there are no toxins in it. You get the food grade. It's even used in treatment for people with parasites. So it acts by kind of encapsulating the bug. The dust smothers the bug's ability to move, breathe, live.
And you found it, and is it like almost instant? Does it, or did you have to keep at it?
Well, every once in a while I'll clean it up and spread new stuff. But due to the fact that I've been using it for the last few years, I have very little problem with bugs now. Right. So this works for all bugs, wood bugs, centipedes, everything.
Okay, Lisa, thanks for that. Just stay there because I've got somebody else on the line. They might have a similar story. Thomas, good afternoon, Thomas.
Hello, Katie.
Have you had issues with millipedes?
I have had this issue, and I've never seen them before. I don't blame you for saying that you haven't noticed them before, because they've never been around my house before. And I've seen most bugs, and these are a nuisance. They're starting to die away now, but they're here all summer. And I've had to, you know, move stuff off the kitchen counter when you come down and you get your breakfast. You don't know where they've been, so... Yeah. I'd be glad to get the name of that product.
We'll put it up. We'll put it up on the Twitter. But tell me your own. So you, is this year the first year that you?
Yeah, I literally never seen them before. I'm not saying you wouldn't see an odd similar looking bug, but the infestation. It's not like thousands of them, but you could nearly set your watch by them at 10 o'clock at night. There they are outside, climbing up the walls, and they'd be kind of gone in the morning. There's an odd straggler hanging about. But you don't know where they've been walking over, you know.
I don't know what it is about these. I'm looking at a photograph of one now, but it's just not something I want to be crawling over my kitchen counters,
no.
I have to say. When you say crawling up the, like, so do they come in the windows? Where do they, how do
they
get into the house?
I don't know where they get in. I think they're kind of like snails. They can squeeze into any hole. They're small anyway. But they're just literally crawling up the walls about 10 o'clock at night, especially on a damp night. That's all I know.
And where do they go then when they come in?
God knows. I wouldn't like to think. I've met them in the bedroom, walking down the hall, you name it.
In the bedroom?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would they go into a bed?
I didn't ask them, but they're on the floor, that's for sure, you know. So they can crawl anywhere they've got that many legs. I have a useful little item in years. They call it a bug buster, a kind of a little mini vacuum thing you can just... But I've been around every night. You know, there's always one up here and everywhere you go. But it gets rid of them quickly, but then you just throw them out the window. But I'd like to have some product to stop them coming in.
Maybe the guys you were throwing out the window are coming back again the next night.
Oh, nothing would surprise me.
Do they go after? Are they in looking for heat or food, you think? Would you find them in kitchen cupboards?
I've no idea, but it is strange that I've literally never seen them before. And, you know, bugs come in every year. I can't think of any at the minute, but you know, we've all seen spiders and all them sort of things, but this is a new one on me.
Yeah, I must say now, I was very taken aback at that email that I read out at the top of the programme, because it does sound like that poor woman is absolutely
demented. When I heard about an hour ago, given what was coming up on the programme, I was one of those eureka moments when I thought, oh blimey, at last. I knew she was talking about the very same problem as I have, but I've asked around neighbours and what have you. Nobody knows what I'm talking about, you know, so nobody's noticed them, but they must be kind of everywhere. It's just that people don't go out of their house at night, you know.
They must be everywhere, but obviously something has happened, or I don't know, do they nest together, or...?
I have no idea. I don't... They're covering the whole ground outside, so they're... I just don't know the answer to that, you know. I tried putting out, put down bleach and everything. They just walk through it. A few dead ones in the morning, but it's hard to keep them out, you know.
So even when you put the bleach on the ground, they literally skeet along.
I thought they wouldn't cross it, but they just sailed through it.
Right.
It got a few in the end, but maybe that product that lady.
Oh yeah,
well,
Lisa, so say the name, because it's kind of a hard one to get your tongue
sure.
around.
It's called Diatomaceous Earth.
Diatomaceous Earth, and it's basically a silica dust or powder.
It's a it's mined out of the earth, and it has an ability to kind of clathrate instead of chelating to it and sticking to it. It actually encompasses. So they lose the ability to breathe and move, it paralyzes the bugs and then kills them. Right.
And as you say, not just the millipedes, all sorts of bugs will go
everything.
Down.
Everything. Yeah. Flies, spiders, mud bugs.
Yeah. And when Thomas is saying there that he'd be like nervous of, you know, the kitchen counters and the table and stuff in the kitchen. Could you put it on the kitchen counter? Is it safe enough to do that?
Yes, because if you use the food grade, get the highest grade. There's food grade, agricultural grade, and then I think there's even a lower grade than that, which is used in construction. But the food grade one can be taken as for parasite infections in humans.
So you can literally ingest it, that's not
you can ingest
okay,
it.
Lisa, stay there. Thomas, please stay there a moment. I want to bring in Helen. Thank you. Thanks, Thomas. Helen, good afternoon.
Hi, Casey.
You've been down this road as well?
Yeah, a few years ago, we have a holiday home in the west of Ireland, and when we would arrive up over the years, there'd be a few dead millipedes on the ground, you know, and that was fine. But then a few years back, when we arrived up, there were actually quite a lot of live ones in the house, but they were all on the floor now. There was nothing up high on the floor around skirtings, you know, that kind of thing, but too many for my liking. Mm-hmm. And I decided to ring a pest control to see what... companies to see what they would charge for coming out to do something about it, and it was in the region of a few hundred euro to get the house sprayed inside. So I decided then to try myself to do something about it. So I sprayed all around the driveway and the floors of the house with Jay's fluid. My father always believed in Jay's fluid, and that didn't do anything at all. Like the man said, the bleach, it just didn't do anything at all. So then I bought ant powder and put it along the skirtings, you know, the edges of the skirtings, and discovered that that killed them. And eventually the infestation was, you know, killed and removed. But so from then I was, a delivery man came up to the house and smelt the Jay's fluid around the house, saw the ant powder around the perimeter of the house. And he asked me what the problem was. And he said that a client of his had the same problem with millipedes. So she had used a product called Biffin, B-I-F-I-N. It's an American product sold on Amazon. It's for killing cockroaches and other insects. So I bought some of it and sprayed it around the house, the following year before we came up, and there was nothing in the house at all.
Nothing at all.
There was dead millipedes outside the house, but nothing in the house.
And this is a liquid spray, is it?
It's a liquid spray. It's highly toxic because it is used for cockroach infestations. But you have to wear protective cover, your clothing and masks and all of that sort of thing when you're using it.
And you wouldn't be, I'm just thinking if anyone with pets or cats or dogs or anything like that,
I'd say it could be dangerous. But, you know, there's lots of cautions on the leaflet with it, you know.
Right.
So it's not something I was fond of using, but I used it because I didn't want the same to happen the next year. But what this year, because of the toxic nature of the product, I decided to just use the ant powder. Early on in the year, I filled the drip trays of the aluminium doors with ant powder, and when we came back up, you know, to the house, we discovered like there was a few dead millipedes in the trays, but nothing got into the house at all. So that seems to have cured the problem, really, you know.
Yeah, and what is in ant powder, I wonder? I wonder, is it some version of the silica, or is it completely different? Again, Lisa, you seem to have a good handle on... have we still got Lisa there?
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, ant powder. Is that some version of it?
I don't know, but I'm judging by all the descriptions, they would contain toxins, and it's usually heavy metals, which are, you know, very dangerous for human beings and especially small children. So I would have an issue with that. Diatomaceous earth will kill all this stuff dead. I have little or no problem, and if I do have a problem, it's because I've got the door open and they walk in, you know, because I'm in and out the front door a lot and gardening or whatever.
So, go back to the
diatomaceous earth. You just put it down. I mean, obviously, new bugs are born every year. So, you know, whatever you've killed last year, I mean, there's a new crop of them coming up, and they like... matter that's organic, they like stuff that's rotting, They will hang out around the edges of buildings where it's damp, and they will hang out in these places.
It's interesting though, Lisa, isn't it? Like Thomas was saying, like he'd never seen them before, and like he's got what you could call definitely an infestation, the way he's describing it there, walking into bedrooms and down halls.
Well, I'm in the northwest of Ireland. I'm in the dampest spot in the country, geographically. So, and I'm in an older home, and that matters too. Those two things are going to predispose anybody to having more bugs trying to get in, because they've lived around the subsurface of your building and been breeding there for ever. Yeah.
Okay, Lisa, thanks for that. Many thanks. Sure. Very helpful. Good top tip for everyone out there wondering what to do with these little black critters coming in their door. Can I bring in Barry now? Barry, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you? How are things?
I'm good, good. Have you been dealing with millipedes or...?
Mice is a bit of a problem now this time of year.
All right.
Yes.
Yes.
I have to keep my traps set there all year round, and I just got up this. I check my traps every morning, and I got up and just checked one of my traps there this morning, and I noticed the trap was moved up, turned upside down, and there was a wee baby mouse in it, and it was just caught by one leg.
Okay, and what do you do with that?
Well, I had to take it outside and kill it.
Right.
Give it to the kitty
cat. With your bare hands.
No, I hit it the crack of something. So I did.
Right.
I did.
Okay, I hope nobody's trying to eat their lunch right now.
The problem now too, do you see, you're coming in now to a sudden cold spell in the weather.
Yeah, and that's
people leaving windows, doors open all day, and a mouse can just, a split second, it can be in and take up nesting in the house.
Yeah. And if once you get a family of mice, it can get out of control fairly quickly, right?
And one mouse can have up to 12 or 13 babies at any one time.
Indeed.
And then after 3 weeks, the babies what that mouse had, they can give birth after 3 weeks.
Is that all it is? It's 3 weeks is the life?
The baby mice are up running around in 10 days. They're fit to feed themselves and fend for themselves.
Right. And do you have a cat?
We have heaps of cats, but they're highly easy.
They're not, do the cats not keep them under control, no?
Well, you see, there could be an old stick houses and one thing and another, and, you know, so maybe windows open and maybe come in a window or...
You sound
you'd want
like,
the cats starved to kill the mice. Yeah. These days.
You'd want to what?
You'd want to starve the cats and then to kill the mice, do you see?
Yeah, it sounds like you kind of have had a life's. This is your life's work, dealing with mice, Barry.
Well, I worked in a couple of different establishments previously, and I've seen a lot of mice. So I've seen them from birth, and I've seen how quick they grow in different establishments.
Yeah.
So I did.
But they don't bother you really. I was in. They bother you obviously. You don't want them around food or.
No, I wouldn't want them in the house. I hate the sight of them, sort of.
Do you? Yeah. So, because you seem to be cool enough in the way you're handling them, though. Because a lot of people wouldn't go near a mouse in a trap like that.
Well, the only reason I took it out, I have a long dustpan, and I took it outside in the long dustpan, and I wouldn't put my hand down to it because it could bite you.
Right.
And if it bit you, you'd have to go and get an injection, you see.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, what would your main tip besides get a hungry cat?
The next plan would be to put poison all up in the attic, but then if they die up there, then they'd stink the house out then. That's another problem.
Yeah, and people are always very, very wary, you know, with good reason, putting out poison, you know, because...
The only option is for the poison, put it outside, around all the buildings outside, before the mice get up to the house. That's the best option.
But would you not be worried that another animal would come along and eat that poison?
Well, if you keep the poison in a certain box that only a mouse would get into, it not a board wouldn't get in or anything else wouldn't get into it, just like a small hole, just a basic poison box that's just meant for mice.
Okay.
Unless your listeners have any other tips for me on the radio there today.
Well, listen, we'll put it out there, Barry, because, you know, everyone has at some stage in their lives had to deal with mice, for sure and certain.
And the love underneath the sink, for some reason, whatever it is about underneath the sink, the love underneath the sink, I don't know for why that is.
Yeah.
Maybe mice on the tap or the pipes on and coming in or... Do not know.
Maybe I was just going to say it's probably a place, an easy place of access around those pipes, unless you've got them well insulated.
Yeah.
Okay, Barry, we'll I have to take a break. Many thanks for that. We'll put it out there and see if anybody else has any tips for us on the mice front. We'll take that break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Pauline now. Pauline, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
What have you got a problem with?
I have a problem with gnats. Now, a lot of people don't know what gnats are. They're like large fruit flies, but I don't think they're related to fruit flies because I've been Googling and looking up to find out what I can about them. But they're in my home for the last 3 or 4 years. They come around the beginning of September. The other night I had 14. Last night, 14 on the landing, which I hoovered up. They come into the kitchen, they come onto the landing, and they come into the bedroom. And it's not an old house. It was built in 1990s. I do have a lot of foliage around. I don't think I have dampness because the walls have been done. They have been impregnated with these little polystyrene balls. And I just don't know what to do.
But where are they coming from, do you think? I mean, are they?
I don't know. Can't even begin to think, Katie. I'm going around brandishing the Hoover like a serial killer on the landing with it on, with the tube catching them. And it's the only thing that can catch them, because if I go at them with a cushion or anything like that, they hide. I've searched outside to see, can I see them? I can't. They don't come into all the bedrooms. They come into our bedroom. They come into one other. They don't come into the other two. They don't come into one of the bathrooms, either bathroom. They didn't come into the kitchen last night because we lit the stove.
So lighting the stove actually keeps them out?
I've never noticed that before, but I just said it to my husband afterwards. None of them came into the kitchen last night, and I was delighted, and I thought maybe we've none. Then I come upstairs, and there were 14 on the landing ceiling.
14? Oh,
God. Now, another time I went in, there were 18 in the bedroom on the ceiling. So it's not, and I would have killed about 12, 14 downstairs in the kitchen. So it's not as if there's just one or two. There are loads of them. And they hang out on the ceiling. They're very, very quick movers. Once I approach to kill them, they're gone. They hide. Otherwise, they just kind of drift around the place.
And, they're bigger than fruit flies, but smaller than house flies.
An average fly. Much smaller than house flies. They have a very skinny little brown body, nearly the size of a nail clipping. Small little wings, and as I said, they don't. They just seem to hang. They don't fly around madly like flies do when they come in. They just hang around. But once you begin to approach them, I have to be very quick with the Hoover. And because of the blast, the way that it pulls them in, I can get rid of most of them. And you might find I see actually one. I'm upstairs now. I see one on the landing. Usually, you don't see them till night time. There's actually one now. I probably missed him last night.
And do they bite or do they bother you in any other way? They just hang around?
Not at all. They just hang around. They're utterly harmless. But it's very disconcerting if you're sitting in bed and you see 10 of them on the ceiling.
I can imagine, yeah.
You know, leaping out of bed, running for the Hoover and running back with the tube and catching them. And then my husband is oblivious. They don't seem to bother him.
Oh, those male goggles that seem to work for loads of things that don't get seen.
Yeah, exactly.
They can come in very handy, I feel. I wish I had them sometimes.
I know, I'm the fly catcher in the house. Right. But I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to use. I have an infrared light downstairs and I thought that doesn't work until I picked it up and I saw loads of bodies in there. Not in infrared, but you know those lamps you used to be able to get years ago? You plugged it in, ultraviolet, not infrared. Yeah. It's like an ultraviolet, a blue light.
Oh, that thing that does the kind of zizzing noise when they...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's quite a number of them on that. But other than that, I don't know how to stop them coming in. I think, and any time you Google it, said they like waste matter, rotting fruit, I've no rotting fruit because the fruit is in a cabinet outside the house where I keep all my fruit. So there's nothing rotting in the house. There might be leaves around outside. There's nothing inside. They started actually a few years ago when a friend of mine was staying over and she used to bring flowers in. And then my husband started to bring flowers in and they were in the little buds of the flowers, I think.
So actually and your husband's romantic gestures is exactly actually what has landed you in this situation. That's what I'm taking from this conversation, Paul.
Exactly.
But it's all his fault, really. Yeah.
Of course it is. And they're staying okay. Now.
Listen,
they might have nested in the buds. I don't know.
Okay. Listen, we'll put it out there, Pauline. I haven't heard that one before now, but if we get anything in, we'll let you know. We'll put it out. We'll put
Katie.
It out to the uniform. Thanks for that, Pauline.
All
best
right,
of luck with it.
Thank you.
Agnes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Agnes, we're back to millipedes. Are we with you?
We're back to millipedes. I live
where we
started. Now, but, probably. But I lived in Hong Kong for over 30 years. And one morning in bed, I got the most terrible pain in my leg. I looked down, and I must have smashed it, actually, as I raised my leg. There was, I took it later to be identified, there was a millipede.
And why did you have a pain from it? Did it?
It bit me.
It bit you?
It bit me.
Ooh.
And I developed, first of all, the leg that he had bitten me on developed huge swelling and then it spread to the other leg and it was a form of elephantitis, which is as the name explains, like an elephant's development.
That was pretty serious then, was it, Agnes? That's a serious illness.
Well, I was on triple therapy, two antibiotics and a steroid for about 3 weeks.
Wow.
Excuse me. But they were rare even in Hong Kong.
And was it a particular type of
particular
type of Chinese millipede?
Or? Yes. It was dark brown and shiny and in segments.
Yeah, well, that sounds very like the commoner garden, Irish garden millipede.
Absolutely, but I didn't, as I said, I had no idea they were here in Ireland.
Yeah, well, apparently they're not only here, but they're here in big numbers if you're unlucky enough to have them coming in your door. And was that your only...
I love your description of all those legs.
I know, it is those legs that are giving
but
me the...
But they do give a very venomous bite.
Well, that's something I did not know now. That's another reason for me to... exactly, to feel my skin crawling even further. Agnes, thanks very much for that. Another.
All right, it happened ages ago, but it's still very, very relevant in my mind.
I'm sure it's not something you would ever forget, getting elephantitis from...
A bite.
From a bite, and especially from a bite from a little guy like that.
He wasn't so little, actually.
You recovered fully, though.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Lovely talking to you, actually. So
lovely talking to you, Agnes. Many, many thanks for that.
A pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Nicholas, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay, what horror story are you going to visit upon us?
Oh, I wasn't horror. There's a few possibly solutions to the millipede is... chickens. If people have chickens free roaming around the outside of the house, they will be delighted to eat a lot of the millipedes. The other thing I would do is I'd research is what is the ideal breeding conditions for millipedes, because it sounds like there's an outbreak this year over in the West for some reason, whatever their ideal conditions are.
I wonder, was it the very warm summer we had?
It's entirely possible. I couldn't vouch for that, but it's entirely possible it does happen. But nature, for every insect that's around, there's a natural predator. So what I was looking for, I know chickens will eat millipedes, and I know guinea fowl will do away with any ticks in the area. But I would be looking up to see what is the natural predator to a millipede.
I would
nature
say
will,
that...
Nature will have its own answer to the millipedes.
I know, but mind you, if the answer is a chickens, that might be quite an extreme... reach for a lot of people if they're living in
depending where they're living,
a suburban
of course,
house.
Yeah, they're in suburbia. Just some of the callers I heard, they were living in a rural area, which if they had chickens, they'd have a double benefit. They'd get rid of the millipedes and they'd have fresh eggs.
Oh, yeah, well, nothing nicer than fresh eggs. And nothing nicer, actually, than seeing chickens pecking their way around.
Yeah, and chickens actually will kill mice as well.
Will they?
Oh, they'll eat them whole.
The laying hens will eat mice.
Yeah, no, I saw it out here one day in my own place. I was out the back and I was feeding them and a mouse ran out from behind the feed and they chased it like you wouldn't believe and one caught it in the air, flipped it up in the air and swallowed it whole.
But you know what? I'd say if you caught that for YouTube, you'd make a fortune. That sounds
I've only seen it once, and I doubt if I'll be seeing it again in a hurry. But anyway, yeah, I know they will. Anything that moves on the ground that the mice or the chickens can catch, they will eat it.
Okay. So that's a big vote for chickens there, Nicholas. Yeah. Nicholas, thanks for that. Appreciate it. And I want to go to Michael now. Michael, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly, beautifully, actually.
Yeah. One thing, Katie, here is that I think people are getting pill bugs or wood lice mixed up with millipedes and centipedes. Pill bugs are very similar to millipedes, but they roll up and they're flatter and grey-looking. But people who are spreading that diatomaceous earth need to be very careful and wear a proper mask. The high-grade COVID-type masks would do. Because the dust can cause silicosis of the lungs.
Which is a very serious issue. And to be fair, Lisa did warn that if you are handling this dust.
She did, yeah. No, she did mention it. But I'd just like to, to warn people, particularly people who are spreading around the house, is that they keep animals away from it as well.
Now, yeah, because Lisa said that there's actually a food grade version of it. Is that not safe for animals either?
Breathing it in would not be safe because silica particles cause silicosis of the lungs.
Right. Whether you're an animal or a human.
And diatomaceous earth is composed of diatoms, which are small algae that are fossilized. And they have a silica skeleton, you see, which persists in the diatomaceous earth. And when that fragments, it can cause silicosis.
Which is something, this is the silicon lodges in your...
In your lungs and causes breathing difficulties,
right.
Yeah.
You know an awful lot about this, Michael.
Some. I'm not a medical person.
But you have expertise, obviously, in this area, have you?
Yeah, I'm a botanist from NUI, from University of Galway.
Ah, so you do know exactly what you're talking about. And would you mistake? Because I would have thought a centipede and a woodlouse would be very distinctly different. Do you think people are mixing up what they have in the house?
You know, it's funny what people can confuse. You know, because millipedes are segmented. You know. And woodlice are segmented as well, as that lady said.
Sorry, Michael, to cut across you, but I just thought, I would have thought most people would know a woodlice be much shorter, flatter insect.
Yeah, but I've heard of infestations in houses of woodlice as well. We had it ourselves. We put cladding around the house, and the woodlice moved in
into the cladding. Oh God.
No, yeah, and they moved into the house as well.
Yeah, they came through, they got into the cladding and moved into the house.
Yeah, and there were mountains of them, but they went away after a while.
When you say mountains of them?
Oh, there were little piles of them in the corners of the house.
Oh my gosh. Look, you can't see me, but I'm actually itching my skin now.
Really?
That is my idea of a living nightmare. And how did you get rid of them?
Well, we hoovered them up, and eventually we managed to get rid of them. But there was quite a lot of them. I think the house got warmer, and they decided they were going to move in then.
Right, yeah, because that's another thing I don't like, the woodlice, because they do tend to travel in very large packs. Are we there, Michael?
Yes, you are.
Yeah. I assume, as a botanist, you have no issue with any of these creatures.
Oh, no, not really. I mean, most of them are harmless. The only there's a person here in the university who works on spiders, and one of them is a nasty one. It bites. They'd be the thing, sort of things you'd be afraid of. But most insects are fairly harmless. They just give people the heebie-jeebies, as it were.
Yeah, and I know we're very lucky, because I know if you have anyone who's ever been to Australia or a country like that, you do need to think about what you're stepping on or you know, what's flying past you in a much more serious way than here, because obviously, as you say, there's just a few spiders that you might have to worry about. But what about that millipede bite that Agnes spoke about there? Was that a millipede, do you think?
I've never heard of that before, to be honest, because unless it's a particularly big one, one can't imagine them, you noticing a bite from a millipede.
I know. Just one other thing to worry about, though, Michael.
Sure.
Listen, thank you. Thanks a million for that. And it's very good to put that warning out there, actually, if you are going to be putting down this. Pronounce it for me again, Diatomaceous earth. Just be very, very careful and be cognizant as well of any animals that might be in the vicinity, because it would be dangerous for them to breathe it in as well. Thank you very much. Michael, we'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, I want to move on to something completely different and on a completely different level, because this is something I think all of us are watching our television screens every night with the news from Iran and what's been happening there for the last week or so. And indeed, what's been happening there for years, but really what's bubbling up and over the last number of days after that young woman was killed by the morality police. Ishmael, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Katie. Thank you for taking the time, and thanks to the crew and everyone on RTE.
Yeah, well, listen, we are. Tell me, you're how long you're living here now, Ishmael? Yeah.
Yes, I'm living in Dublin right now.
And when did you leave Iran?
Well, I left Iran 3 years ago, but I only came to Dublin 2 months ago. I was living in Serbia for 3 years.
Right. And like, you're watching all of this going on back at home now.
Yes.
What's your sense?
I am watching, and my heart is broken daily. Seeing the scenes that we see on the streets of Iran, and that the fact that people are desperate there, and that we are desperate there, and that we could do nothing here. I mean, we couldn't do anything here except like talk to the press, talk to the media, try to raise awareness. And your duty is the biggest, and that is why I'm thanking you and everyone on RTE that are trying to be our voice.
But tell me, and of course, I'm just very conscious as well that, and I was very conscious of that person this morning on Morning Ireland, that we need to be very careful about putting voices out there in these circumstances because of possible backlash. Do you have family back at home?
Well, I do have a young daughter. She lives with her mother back in Iran.
And do you have sisters, or like, would you have grown up understanding, or having that sense of what it was like to be a woman in Iran?
Well, being a woman in Iran, it's just tough. I mean, living in Iran is just tough, but being a woman in Iran is just more than doubly so. That the constant pressure from not just the authorities, but also some of the families themselves. Some of the families are patriarchal, and the society. I mean, the way the society looks at women. Not all of that has been as developed. I mean, there are a lot of developed families, but still, a large portion of the society still has some more traditional views on women, and that they're wearing, what they're wearing, they're dressing, and worst of all is the authorities and the authoritarian regime of Iran that imposes severe dressing codes for women.
Yeah, but I there is a sense, though. I mean, I know that there have been times previous to this where the protests kind of spilled out onto the streets, but there is a sense that. And it's not just women, and incredibly brave women, who are actually protesting at this time.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of men supporting them now as well.
everyone is out on the streets now. And I mean, the recent events, the protests are on the streets right now, are nothing like the previous ones, like back 13 years ago, and then it was 4 years ago, and then 2 years ago. There were protests on the street, but this time everything seems much more different, and everyone, people are not just looking at the white police as they are pushing them back. People are also pushing back. People are defending themselves when the riot police beats them up. People have come to the understanding that they can't continuously live in fear, so they're fighting back. So people are hoping that the government might this time actually back down and give people some of their rights.
Yeah, I mean, they're not showing any signs of it, I have to say. You've probably heard the reports today. The foreign minister there giving out about America, about European countries, trying to intervene and interfere in their domestic business is where they're at now. But as you say, this thing seems to be growing and growing. Will you hang on there, Ismail? I want to bring in another voice. Grace, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. And Grace, you are originally from Iran as well, but you've been here for some time now.
Yes, exactly.
And what do you think when you're seeing what's happening at home now?
It just makes my heart broken. I can't just tolerate this oppression anymore. I've been informed, like a couple of my relatives, they've been arrested due to a protest because of freedom. You know, you can't have freedom in your country. Even when you're outside, you have the fear of tracing that you get traced by their spies there. I mean, this is totally unacceptable. Please, please don't turn blind eye to Iran.
And just tell me, like, you've been living in Ireland. Do you wear a hijab while you're here?
No, because this is not my choice. In Iran, you have to wear a hijab. They don't give you, like, freedom of choice. Do you like it or not? Even here, I have Iranian passport. The picture of my passport is with hijab. You can't choose even the picture of your passport. Each time in the airport, they stop me by asking me, who are you? Who is this woman? Is that you? Are you in disguise? And such questions. I can't even choose a picture of my passport as I like to do.
And your family members that have been arrested, I mean, you must be very worried about what might happen to them back.
Yeah. They don't disclose any news when they arrest someone. They just leave the family with no news.
Were you an adult by the time you left Iran?
Yes.
So did you grow up with this regime?
Yes. I myself, I've never been arrested by the police due to hijab. But I went to the police station 2 times to help my friends get out by giving them like a proper clothing, as they say, because they've been arrested for not having proper hijab. So I went there to bring like, I don't know, scarf, whatever, to just help my friends to come out. I saw like very tragic scenes. They were like serial killers, criminals with handcuffs in the same police stations as they keep like women for morality reason. Like they call themselves morality police. What the hell could have been mean? I mean, I can't understand.
And would you have always been aware of, the possibility that you could, catch the eye of one of these morality police men?
Yes. I was careful. You know, I try to wear something not to just grab their attention, living by fear. That's why we left the country. We had like everything. We had money, family, properties, everything. That's the main reason we left the country, because we were looking for freedom. You know, we are sick of this hypocrite regime policies.
And this young woman, and oh God, it's so heartbreaking to see her photographs everywhere now, Mahsa Amini.
Yeah.
She has her death, and I mean, there's been other horrific tragedies around this over recent years, but her death seems to have just resonated so much with young women in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. You know that they still keep denying that we killed that girl. They say she died due to heart attack. They brought like fake doctor to their own media to just say she had like a history of brain tumor when she was a child. Can you believe the level of, you know?
But that's not, very few people are accepting that, obviously.
But I mean, nowadays, no one in Iran, they listen to the Islamic media. They have like their own media, but unfortunately, they curb the internet in Iran. They filter social media. People have like problems accessing to internet. It's very hard to access the internet in Iran. But people, they are standing in the streets, although they know that they might get killed or arrested, but they still in the street because they are sick of this regime. They want this terrorism to be terminated.
And
it's time forever.
The Iranian community in Ireland, Grace, is there a sense of kind of foreboding now? Is everybody, you know, in contact with each other, watching footage all the time, watching what's coming out of Iran?
Well, there are not the numbers of Iranian here outside in Ireland. I mean, in Ireland, it's not like that much. I'm not in contact with anyone, actually, because basically we do have the fear of getting tracked by spies. So I'm not sure. Maybe there are some activities are going on, but I'm not aware of those.
Well,
I just
Katie,
found this link on Instagram, and I told myself I need to talk to someone.
Katie, may I come in on that?
Yes, Ismail.
Yes, actually, I mean, myself, my wife here, and a couple of, I mean, I think a little more than 100 Iranian people, we have been gathering, we have been holding gatherings at the Spire. I mean, we had one last Wednesday, and we had one yesterday just at the Spire in front of the GPO. And we have scheduled another one this Wednesday at the Spire at 5:30. In the afternoon.
And Ismail, can I ask you, would you be nervous, or would some of the people who, you know, would want to be at that protest or you know, to support what's going on, would they be nervous of maybe, you know, photographs being taken?
We want the world to see not our faces but our presences.
Yeah.
But that we are supporting the people of Iran, even though our hands are tied here, even though we can't do much here, we still want the world to see that we are worried, that we want this to stop in Iran.
Okay, I want to bring in, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce it right, is it Bahara? Bahara?
Yeah, Bahara is here.
Bahara, yep. You're Kurdish yourself, just like... Yeah, so tell me, what is your story? You've been here for over 10 years now, is it? 15 years, actually.
Yeah, I've been in Ireland for more than 15 years now. You've seen the news. Like, we are so upset. We are, like, people are fed up. We're not any more afraid of our pictures to go out. Like, people are dying on the street in Iran. We have no freedom. This is not something new. But this time, like, killing people for hijab in this century, it's unbelievable. Like, everyone's so upset. I'm not in contact with my family. They have no internet. I was trying to call them the other day, and someone else picked up their phone. Like, they even controlled the landlines because they know, like, we're trying to reach them. They're tracking us.
And tell me...
Even in Ireland, like, we live in fear, but not anymore. Because as the other guy said, we were protesting this Sunday, and we will on Wednesday. We did last Wednesday. I'm going to the Spire today as well, even on my own, just to show the people, like, to support us, be our voice.
Tell me about your own life. What age were you when you left Iran?
I was 19.
And would you have spent your teenage years wearing hijab, being, you know, worried about the morality police?
Yeah, always. We had no freedom, and that's the reason exactly why we left the country. We didn't leave for financial issues. Like, we left because there was no freedom, especially for women. Men's are the same, but women's are the worst.
But you it's not like, I mean, we know, and well, there's been a lot of focus on Afghanistan and the Taliban and, you know, children or girls being pulled out of school there and not being allowed to you know, to get an education. You were educated, though, was like, despite the regime there, which, you know, is so difficult for women. The women were still getting an education. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. We do have education. It's not like that, but still, you know, it's an Islamic country, but you don't have a freedom to choice between, you know, I don't want to be Muslim, or I don't want to wear a hijab, or like basic human rights. I was talking like the other time, going into a shop, into a jewelry shop to buy a jewelry for yourself, and the man says, oh, you have to come with your husband or with your dad. Like, I can't sell or buy stuff from you. Like, the mother in Iran, they don't have the right to have their children. The children is for, like, the dad. The dad can take the children from the mother. Like, you have no right in Iran for everything. Like, for everything you do, you're not even the second citizen. You're nothing. We have no right. And now this time, like, people are fed up. They can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I think a lot of people really, this is shining such a light on it, or that people can't believe really that this regime has lasted for so long and that women have been in this position for so long. Describe the morality police for people who are not familiar with what's going on in Iran. Like, who are they? Are they a legitimate police force, or are they kind of self-appointed?
No, they are legitimate, yeah, police force. They have big vans, scary vans, with few police guards, including women. And they wait in busy areas, and if they see anyone without proper dress code, even having a scarf, and they check everything. They check the height of your clothing, your trousers, the color of your hair, or anything unusual. They will arrest you and they take you, and God knows if the family see you or not. If you're lucky, then you have to give, you know, you have to sign documentation that I'm never going to do this again and I will have a proper dressing. That's when you're so lucky. But unfortunately, Mahsa wasn't the lucky one.
And are you're from Kurdish West Iran?
Yeah, yeah. Was it
more difficult for Kurdish women? Because by all reports, the fact that Mahsa Amini was Kurdish made her situation worse.
Probably, I can't comment on that one. But Kurdish people are always, under pressure for everything. Not just hijab, we are second citizens, like I don't know, but it's more difficult for Kurdish people, obviously.
And when you moved to Ireland, did you continue to wear hijab or?
No, never. Never. The minute we leave the country, like the minute they close the doors in the plane, the hijab is gone. It's like that. The minute that even you're still in the country, but the doors of the plane closed, the hijab is gone. We don't want the hijab. We don't want the scarf. This is not part of us. They just force us to do it. And now they're killing people for hijab in 20th century. Like, basic human rights. It's unbelievable. People can't take it anymore. And that's the end of the regime. Like, they don't want this. They don't want this anymore.
Of course, a lot of people now, will say a lot of women, Islamic women living in Ireland, are wearing hijab of their. But obviously, there's no morality police coming, stalking the streets,
it's
forcing
their choice.
Them to do
like,
it.
Yeah, it's in those countries, like, you have a choice. In some countries, you do have a choice. Like, if you're Muslim and you want to wear, like, there is a freedom. You can choose. That's what we want. Like, we don't want to be forced to like the basic thing, wearing something to go outside, you need to be worried, like, somebody is going to take me to the prison, somebody is going to hit me, somebody is going to kill me for what I'm wearing. Fear. It's just, I don't know. Some people, they, like, it's probably, people can't even think about these stuff, like the trouble that we go through every day, like the women in Iran, females, even young, like girls, when they turn, I don't know, to the age of 9 or 10, then they have to, you know, start wearing. There's no choice. You can't, like.
It's just even at that age, it's age 9 or 10 is when the scarf.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's
it's heartbreaking. It's so sad.
I really appreciate you talking to us, because I know it is not. It is a decision you have to make to speak out now, because, you know, there may be consequences. I know that. So, Bahare,
yeah.
Really appreciate you. And I know you feel so strongly about it. That's why you wanted to come on.
Yeah, no problem. There's no fear anymore. People are dying on the street, and that's all we can do, like, talk to you. Thanks to you guys, like, to be our voice. Thanks for your support. That's all we can do here. Like, we're away from our family, from my mom, my dad, my sister, my brothers, niece, nephew, everyone. Like, I'm the only one here. All the family back there. I haven't been speaking with them since, I don't know, 10 days ago, since the problem started. At the start, wasn't that bad, but now even landline, they control it. Maybe they don't control all the landlines, but, you know, people like us, they know, like, we will contact them. They think, like, we're, you know, transferring information or... All I want to know is how my family are.
And of course.
It's just... I can't work. Right now I'm working, but I can't focus. Like, it's crazy.
It is. It's such a difficult time. It's such a difficult time. Bahare, many, many thanks and best of luck. And I hope everyone is safe and sound back at home. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And before we leave Iran, I want to talk to Mary now. Mary, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. My sympathies with all the citizens of Iraq, you know.
Of
they're
Iran.
Such beautiful people. I visited there in 1978. My brother and his wife had been over there working for about 10 years, and they had to get out when the revolution happened and the Shah was overthrown.
Yeah, so in 78, the Shah was still in...
79.
Well, the Shah was still in place at that stage.
He was still in place in 78. And then in 79, 80, he was overthrown, and all the expats, the British and the Irish and Americans, all those people had to leave just for safety reasons.
And what was it like in 1978? Was it very westernized at that stage? Was it, but with the Shah in place, and that was obviously an American
backed. With the Shah in place.
Was it very westernized?
Women were oppressed, you know. They could only go out at certain times, and they couldn't be seen out with men. Inside, I think they could actually bare their faces like that, but outside, they wouldn't be allowed to have any part of them exposed except their eyes. The chador, it was called then, that I can remember, was the black top-to-toe garment that only the eyes were allowed out. And
really, because Mary, but I thought... Now, my geopolitics might be all wrong, but I thought it was... like prior to the Ayatollah coming in there after the revolution, that women were quite westernized in Iran.
No,
is that not the case?
Not.
No,
well, not when I was there. The Ayatollah Khomeini, came in after the Shah. I can't remember the Shah's name. Shah. Oh gosh. But anyway,
Go on.
The country, it's the most beautiful place. The people were really friendly. You're always welcome. And they still apparently are like that, you know. But but they've been oppressed for so long, and women in particular, they weren't allowed to socialise or do anything like that, and they couldn't be seen anywhere with anything other than their eyes kind of visible. Even their ankles had to be covered all the way down. And in the searing heat over there, that must have been so uncomfortable. But I didn't work with many of them. I worked for 4 weeks in the hospital. And again, well, the staff were mainly expats, you know, Irish, English, American, I don't know where else. But I was treated, and my brother and sister-in-law, who were there for about 10 years, they were treated really well in the job that they were in. But that's as far as it extended to. They could visit other people, go into their homes and be entertained. And but the women were...
The Iranian women. Women. But all the expats could have their relaxed lifestyle.
Expats could have their social life in their own homes. It was really a good place to work. First of all, the weather is what I noticed first, of course. The weather and the work. The hospital was beautiful. I worked there for 4 out of 6 weeks I was there. And my sister-in-law worked there as well. She's a nurse. And my brother had gone out with Ryanair. Mm-hmm. And he was an engineer anyway, working on the planes, the radio systems, and fly-by-wire. And they had lived there for about 8 years before this all started and erupted. In, as far as I can remember, it was 98, 97. I was there 98.
You were there 78. Wasn't it 78? Was the 70s you were there when Shah was there? Yeah.
Sorry. 78.
Yeah, the revolution was 79, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. It was 78. I was out there in the summer of 78, and I was there for 6 weeks, and I worked for 4 out of 6. But my brother and sister-in-law had worked for about 10 years altogether there before they had to leave, and that was just as the revolution was starting. And they were advised by the Irish Embassy, and British, everybody from outside was telling them they had to go and they had to leave, you know, pack up and leave.
And of course, Mary, the tragedy is, and anyone who has been there, I've never been to Iran myself, but anyone that I've spoken to who has been there, there's such a beautiful country and such a beautiful people.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. And I was taken to different places as well, having the family there, going up to the Caspian Sea and all the scenery and everything. And the people themselves are okay. You see, they're lovely, beautiful, warm, friendly people, you know, very hospitable and very much in favour of all the people that were working there. And the people that were working there, now my brother and sister-in-law, they could dress, and my sister-in-law could dress as she pleased, but it still was a bit, you know, dicey as to what she could wear. But they got along great, you know. And as I say, we went to the Caspian Sea, and I'm not sure how far we went down the other way. Okay. But the scenery, absolutely gorgeous,
beautiful,
you know,
beautiful.
And the weather.
But Mary, it's a very sad state of affairs there now. I'll have to let you go, Mary. I've got to take a break. But many thanks for that. That's Mary, who has memories of her time in Iran going back to the 70s. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And now to something completely different again. Piers Turner, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you doing, Katie? Thanks for having me on the show.
Delighted to have you, Piers. You want to contact the family of Jerome O'Leary. Will you tell people who Jerome O'Leary is, in case they don't know?
Yeah, Jerome O'Leary was the youngest boy shot in Crow Park in 1920. It was the Bloody Sunday. And I was employed with Dublin City Council for 41 years, And one of my buildings I took care of as the electrical service department was number 69. And that's where Jerome was born and
number
lived, which is...
Pierce, 69 Blessington Street, was it?
69 Blessington Street, yes. Right. That's where Jerome lived with his mother and father. His father was an accountant, a bookkeeper accountant, and he left there, went to the football match, and was shot sitting on the canal bank in Crow Park in 1920. And I'd like to see a little plaque erected to Jerome. Yeah. And the family.
And can we just remind us, I think if I have the right Blessington Street, is that there on the south inner city?
It is.
Or the north inner city, I should say, is
it's
it?
It's on the north inner city.
Yeah.
It's just off Dorset Street.
Yeah.
If you continue down, it's a Woodman Street. If you went down, crossed Dorset Street, you come onto O'Connell Street, onto North Frederick Street, onto O'Connell Street.
Yes, yes, yeah, that's where. And is that local authority housing on that street at the moment? Yeah,
it is. It's been run by the DePaul Trust, the DePaul Ireland, as a shelter, and Dublin City Council owns the building.
Right.
So, in order to put a plaque up, there's a little procedure. There's a policy for commemorative naming and infrastructure and the provision of monuments and plaques in the system that one has to abide by in order to put a plaque up.
You have to get permission for the family.
You have to get permission, but Dublin City Council own the building, so that's
okay,
you're halfway there. That's
right. So the only thing you need to do now is find a family member, but that's why you're talking to us. You haven't been able to track down any member of Jerome O'Leary's surviving family.
No, it happened. And that would be great. As I said, the father, the parents were married in Limerick on the 6th of November, 1904. So someone might have an idea, or someone might come forward and give permission. One has to get permission.
And I'm just looking at the census form for their home, that the home in Blessington Street. This is the 1911 census, of course. It's the only one we have from that time. And Jerome had a sister who was about 4 years older than him, called Mary Angelo, according to that census.
I'm just lately aware of that. Correct, yes. He should be 14 or something, I think.
So maybe that name, because that's not the most usual name, Mary Angelo, might ring a bell with somebody. And just, we've only got a minute left, Pierce, why is it that this little boy's story has, you know, touched you so much that you feel he does deserve this plaque?
Well, we've gone in and out of that building for 20 years maintaining the electrical. It just got me in the heart that there was nothing up there to say that the little boy lived there. And wouldn't it be nice to just to have that, you know, that it's not forgotten.
And he was only 10 years old when he died instantly. He was shot in the head.
He was shot. He was sitting on the wall watching a match. He got up on the wall on the canal end of it from outside. You know the way little boys would probably climb up on a wall, stuff like that. And he was just shot. It could have been a pot shot, or it could have been a ricochet. Who knows? But it was very, very sad. And it would be lovely to have a little plaque there. And it's on my bucket list.
You are determined to find out somebody.
I'm retired now and I'm determined to do that, Katie. You know, I really am.
But it'll only happen if you can get permission from a family member. That's the only thing in your way now.
From a family member.
Okay.
And if there's a family member out there, anyone that you know, just come forward and maybe to yourselves, or and you can pass it on to me, I'd be very grateful.
Okay, well, look, we've put it out there now. That's anybody who is a family member or knows a family member of that little boy, Jerome O'Leary, to get in touch with us, and we'll put you in touch with Pierce. And we will get going on ticking off that one out of Pierce Turner's bucket list. That's it. I'm out of time. Best of luck with that, Pierce. the today's programme. Just let me see. I've just lost my thing. Ollie Hamilton was the BCO. Lee Mullen was on sound. And Shan produced. I'll let you go. Hang on for Ray Darcy, and we'll be back with you. Joe will be back with you on Wednesday.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.